Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Father Joachim Lally. Father Lally has been a priest he celebrated his 50th anniversary not too long ago. And Father Lally is someone who focuses on both the contemplative life and the life of selfless service in action. A little bit about his life. He was a Benedictine monk in Arkansas from back in the 50s. He is a Paulist priest now, and he's involved in several organizations and efforts. He's the founder and executive director of the Adelante Youth Center in Lawrence, Massachusetts. He's the co-founder of the Dominican Youth Mission. He's led over 40 evangelization, construction, and medical missions in the Dominican Republic since 1990. And he is a presenter at Paulist Catholic Information Center here in Grand Rapids. He's a certified presenter of Centering Prayer and also active in prison ministry for the Archdiocese of Boston, New York, and Grand Rapids. He's also a board member and on the development committee of the San Juan Diego Academy in Wyoming, Michigan, not far from here. So we welcome once again Father Joachim Lally. Hello, Father.
Thank you, Fred. It's so good to be back.
Last week we talked a bit about, well, more than a bit, about the Catholic mystical / contemplative tradition and how it has always had its challenges. And I'm wondering if the challenges of the hierarchy of the church, as I mentioned last week, sometimes throughout history, the church has treated meditation and contemplation like the crazy uncle in the attic. And I'm wondering if that tension actually helped the tradition, or did it just completely hinder it?
Well, it's hard to evaluate whether it helped or hindered, but I think the fact that it has persevered through all these years says that I think that this is of God, this is from the Spirit, and that it is a challenge because it asks one going into it to go into a spirit of nothingness, of lack of control, of not having to know everything, and a sense of abandonment as Jesus did. And so the whole essence can be summed up in those words, let go. And a lot of people want to hold on, not let go. And so this is basically a prayer of silence, where you don't try to look at anything, review the past or plan for the future, solve any problems. It's really built in failure, Fred, because you cannot, quote, do it right. You cannot have a blank slate and get rid of all, quote, distractions. And so it's a constant barrage on your ego, that part of yourself that in mystical terms means you believe you are separate from God. It's the illusion that you're separate from God. And so through this depth of prayer, which some of the greatest saints experienced, you get this personal experience of God's love for you, this unconditional love that is God's nature. God cannot not love you because God is love, as St. John says, and not God doesn't do love. God is love. So we cannot change God's nature. God loves us unconditionally. We cannot stop God from loving us. We're not that strong. And so this is this type of surrendering where you, a lot of times when you're reading prayers and so forth, you're in control. You know, you decide, I'm going to pray this prayer and I'm going to read from this book. But in silence, you go into that sense of, wow, you're vulnerable. And this is where true love can take place. And it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it's the thing that will transform you more than anything else in the world.
Do you Do you speak to a lot of people, particularly Catholics? I mean, I realize that you're in the world and you deal with a lot of people from a lot of different traditions. What is the level of interest that you see from the average Catholic today? Is it still something that they're a little afraid of or just don't feel they're cut out to do? Or is there a hunger that is expressed to you when say, somebody takes one of your classes on mysticism or maybe even just hearing you preach mm-hmm. at a mass? What kind of reaction do you get from most people, if you can even
right.
say that?
No, I generally get very favorable reactions, both my classes and preaching. I feel very strongly about what I'm saying, and people pick up that and pick up the joy and the experience, knowing that I'm not just talking out of my head. This is not ideology. This is personal experience. And so a lot of people are attracted to that, although they have almost no clue as to what contemplation means. It's a mystery, and that's, in fact, even the word mysticism, it's unfortunate that it's called that, because it's connected as the same root as mystery. And mystery is something a lot of people are trying to avoid. You know, they want to be on top of things. But the word mystic, as Richard Rohr describes it, mysticism, is that which goes beyond doctrine, morality, and ritualism. Those three. Those are all wonderful and good, but they're not going to the real essence, which is union with God. And they're all, like the Buddha example and Thomas Merton, referred to them as fingers pointing to the moon. They're not the moon. They're fingers pointing to the moon. They're not an end in themselves. And yet a lot of people associate religion with doctrine, morality, and ritualism. And they stop there. They don't go beyond that. And so I think they basically in their soul want that. I think everyone wants this union, but they have no idea about how to go about doing it.
And I would imagine if your experience is anything like mine, you talk to people, you mention meditation, and they'll say, oh, I've tried to meditate. I can't do that. And I'll say, well, how did you meditate? Well, you know, I just sat down and tried to clear my mind.
Right.
And there are methods, as you teach in centering prayer, right? There
right,
are
yes.
methods. You don't just sit down and try to clear your mind. If you'll be sitting there till doomsday.
You never will. Because no. It's not a matter of clearing, and that's not the objective. The objective is to go beyond your ego and that sense of separateness from God. And the essence of centering prayer as such is the return. It's like the prodigal story, the prodigal son story, the son returns to the father. The returning is the essence. And so when you are aware that now in this 30-minute, 20-minute practice, whatever you have, you are thinking about what you're going to have for supper or the movie you saw last night or whatever it is, a problem you have with your spouse, when you become conscious of it, you make a decision to let go and to return to a sacred word or your breath or, you know, whatever it is that will take you out of your focus on yourself and your issues and your problems. So it's the return. And if you have to return 1,000 times in 20 minutes, that's 1,000 offerings of love to God.
Although I'm sure you know someone would say, that's 1,000 opportunities for me to beat myself up.
Well, and this is the essence. I'm glad you pointed that out, because a lot of people have treated religion as something, as a function. You go into it to get something out of it. You know, it's the tit for tat, you know, reward, punishment game. And that's not anywhere near what religion is. Religion is union with God. It comes from the Latin religo, religare, which means to bind back, to tie together, to make sense out of everything. And so by your returning, And doing this without judging yourself for returning, that you got off track or what it is, you gradually built up a sense of non-judgmentalism. And I would say in my 40 years of practicing this, that the greatest blessing, not something you go into receive, but it's a side effect, is being non-judgmental. Non-judgmental of others and because judgment means to separate. You separate yourself. You put the other person as an object. And it's if you're in a judgment mode, you are going to be out of peace. You're going to be off-center. And you'll be eccentric. That's what the word means, off-center. And so I do it twice a day because I do it in the morning for 30 minutes when I wake up, and then around 5 o'clock. Because by 5, I'm realizing that I'm kind of getting off-center again. I'm getting eccentric. I need that return to the source. So I feel like I need to stand up and say, in a alcoholic AAA meeting, my name is Joachim. I'm an addict. I'm an addict to spiritual, to this contemplation, this centering prayer. It's transformed my life. I don't know how people live without it.
Sure, sure. Now, I've also spoken to people who were meditation teachers from other traditions, and a lot of them have expressed the concern that some of their students or other people they know get flaky. Have you ever had that, maybe not yourself, but have you ever had that experience of counseling somebody who was really going off the deep end, perhaps investing too much time in meditation, not enough time in their duties, etc.? Is that a danger?
Well, it can be. Certain people want this kind of contemplation, meditation, to be a therapy. And actually, Father Thomas Keating, the founder of Contemplation in Action, or the Contemplative Outreach, he was the Trappist abbot in Spencer and out in Snowmass. He calls it divine therapy, and it is. I think it God has a way of entering into you and transforming you without your help. God just does it because God's good at being God, you know. But look what happened to Jesus when he went into the desert before his active life. It says the demons came at him, okay? And this is what happens when we go into silence. All of our demons come out too, and that's why we so often avoid silence. We want to turn the radio on, the TV going, and everything, and just kind of keep one step inside of silence, because I think if some people are afraid, wow, God might do to me what he did to Abraham, ask for my only begotten son to be crucified or killed or whatever. And so if I just kind of keep my distance from God and just go to church and, you know, do all the duties I'm responsible for, then I'll just get along fine with God. But don't get me face to face. Don't get me in silence, because I don't know what could happen. So there's a fear. But there are people who need therapy outside of the prayer practice, and some people maybe need that therapy before they go into it, if it's a very severe. So you're right, there are people who, you know, can go off the deep end.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads. This is WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and today I'm speaking with Father Joachim Lally. We're talking about the mystical and contemplative traditions in the Catholic Church. Let me mention your retreat right now, because last week we waited way too long towards the end of the program, and I don't want to rush you on this, but you're having a unique experience coming up, by a unique something that you've never done before. You're going to be facilitating a retreat in May of this year, 2017, at a Hindu ashram in the Bahamas. Life could be worse.
Yes, right, yeah. All kind of people want to carry my luggage, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Tell us about that. Last week you mentioned you don't know how they got a hold of you, these people in the Bahamas, do you?
I don't know. There's a Paulist priest brother of mine, Father Tom Ryan, who is in charge of ecumenical interfaith relations for the—
Whom I know.
You know, of course. He has been there once or twice as an invited guest, But he did not say that. I talked with him about it. He did not mention my name. So we don't know. It's the mystery, okay? But I'm just saying that I will be giving only two presentations among, there's about seven different presenters in different faiths, and from Buddhist, Hindu, Sufi, the Jewish, Rumi, Islam. So, you know, it's going to be wonderful. I'll be the only one that's from a Christian tradition. So it's, for me, this is going to be a new experience. I'm looking forward to it.
I would say so. And I will say this too, that I know that the Shivananda Ashram, the organization, is one of the most respected in Hinduism and beyond, in the greater yoga community, because, you know, I call it a Hindu ashram, but I can guarantee you there will probably be more non-Hindus attending this than anything else. So, again, the dates are, May 5 through 9, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And there's the phone number there if you want to.
Let's see. Okay, yes. If anyone is interested in connecting with this or joining Father Lally for this, it is 559-5167. I don't see an area code here.
Yeah, it's the top on there, right above that. 816, is it? 866, I think.
Oh, okay. I see that, yeah. 866-559-5167. And I also know that if you just went to shivananda.org, sometimes Shiva is spelled with an H, sometimes without, but you always pronounce the sh in
okay.
Shiva.
Okay.
So this these folks do not use the H, so it's S-I-V-A-N-A-N-D-A, shivananda.org, or if you Google the Shivananda Ashram Yoga Retreat, you'll find out more information. Father Lally and I were speaking before we recorded the show today that the costs for this are really quite appropriate, I think.
Yes.
A lot of these retreat centers, boy, you have to take out a second mortgage to afford. This, I think, is really, really impressive. Another thing we did last week, I'd like to get back while we still have some time today. I threw out the names of a few Catholic mystics, and you responded because you teach courses on the mystics of the Catholic Church. One particular saint in the Church I know is used as an example in both Hindu circles and in Buddhist circles. And that is Teresa of Avila. Hold forth on her for a few minutes.
All right. She is wonderful. I was blessed to be able to go to Avila in Spain a couple of years ago. I was visiting a friend in Salamanca, not too far from Avila, and went over there. And that is generally the recognized area of Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross. And they were contemporaries, friends of each other. And both of them, most well known for is that they were the reformers of the Carmelite order. And in other words, they wanted to get back more to the original rule and more silence and so forth. And it had kind of picked up a lot of baggage on the way. So, but they were resisted, as usually reformers are, by the nuns of Avila of Teresa and also the friars, Carmelite friars of John of the Cross. In fact, John of the Cross, his community kidnapped him and put him in prison for about a year or so. And it was really traumatic. He was just in very miserable conditions, and they were just not wanting to change. I mean, a lot of people don't want to change, and reformers are not always very popular. So,
and she describes her experiences. I remember reading like a bullet being shot through her spine. She had some very powerful experiences that were were of deep concern to her mm-hmm. superiors. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. She had one. She probably entered around, she was around 15 or 16, as they did in those days. And it wasn't until about 15 years later when she had her great vision that began the transformation of her life and her direction of her life in terms of wanting to, feeling called by God to reform the community.
Mm-hmm.
And she was tireless. She would travel all over the place starting new convents. And there's a story that I understand is questionable whether it's true or not, but that she was in a carriage one time and it got stuck in the mud and it was a lot of trouble and everything. And she supposedly supposed to have said, God, if this is the way you treat your friends, it's no wonder you still have so few of them. You know, so, but you know, those traditions go, you know.
Sure. I understand. And now, last week we were talking about how any church, any organization, particularly a spiritual organization, you have a hierarchy. Usually, mm-hmm. you have a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Hierarchy appreciates control, and these mystics come out of the woodwork every now and then, and all of a sudden, the hierarchy is wondering, well, are we really in control? And maybe we need to put the kibosh on this person here or that person there. And you were talking about how in the contemplative life, we surpass that and we actually have an experience of God. But of course, the hierarchy, often quite rightly so, is saying, yes, how do we know it is of God? All right, we have a Bible. We have the writings of the church fathers. We have this. We have that. And if it doesn't meet these standards, then we have a problem. So, for instance, while we may talk about people who are revered, such as Thomas Merton, mm-hmm. such as Father Keating, and the ancient mystics as well, as we were just saying, Teresa of Avila. I remember this one woman from Bayside, New York, back in the 70s. You're grimacing a little bit.
Oh,
now.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So why isn't she in your pantheon of great Catholic mystics?
Well, I like what Richard Rohr says, and says that there's a three-legged approach to this. And one is scripture, one is tradition, and one is one's personal experience with God. And one needs all three. There is a place for tradition and scripture and hierarchy who can look at these various experiences of people and discern, okay, now this truly seems to be from God and this doesn't. And so that's one who helps to shepherd, pastor, and just be one who tries to keep some semblance of order and truth. And it's valuable, you know. So in this case of the Bayside person, I think that they examined it and everything and found out it really wasn't much substance there.
Yeah. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, they used to run videos of her on the local public access channel here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. And I don't remember her name, but she was quite a firebrand. She felt that the Pope was an imposter.
Yeah. Right.
And regardless of what she said, even if she was... giving grand and beautiful pronouncements. She did it in this most wretched voice with this hard New York accent. The Pope is an imposter.
You got it. You got the accent. I lived in New York 6 years. I know.
And my wife and I would listen to her. And it's funny because my father's secretary was a follower of her.
Oh,
I didn't, and I had no idea who she was back then. I didn't really learn of this woman and her true mission until I moved here to Grand Rapids. But growing up in Detroit, my father's secretary would say some things that I found were interesting, but I had no idea what it all meant. But yeah, she was a character.
Well, there's a lot of them, let me tell you. Right. So
In every tradition.
Every tradition, of course.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. Yeah. And one thing I will say about the Catholic Church, you know, there's pluses and minuses in everything,
of course,
right?
Of course.
In the church, you do have a hierarchy that says, no, this vision or this person is not being faithful, and here's the reason why.
Right.
Where you have other traditions that have no hierarchy, right, and people can just go crazy.
They gain followers
yeah, and start yeah, cults. And,
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You need everything. You need the scripture, tradition, the personal experience, the mysticism, which is going beyond doctrine, morals, and ritualism, to get that intimate, personal love relationship with God, so that you can say with all your heart, I no longer believe in God. I know God. This is a deeper, you know, believing can be just a head experience, and sure, anybody can believe this, that, and the other, whether or not you believe in global warming or whatever. But that's an ideology. You go beyond the ideology to this personal experience where, you know, no one can take that from you.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
It's beautiful.
We've talked about your retreat in the Bahamas. I'm just curious, in the next couple of months, do you have any classes, any events that you'd like to talk about in February, March, and April?
I'm teaching on the first Wednesday of every month at the Catholic Information Center on Father Richard Rohr's new book, The Divine Dance, about the Trinity. And it's the first Wednesday of every month. And I just had the first Wednesday of January. I have four more. And it's all about the Trinity as relationship. And so I'm very excited about that.
Wonderful. So people can contact the Catholic Information Center if they need more information on that.
Right.
Beautiful.
I'll be also teaching another two classes in April on nonviolent communication skills.
Wonderful. Father Lally, it's been great to have you here.
Good to be here, Fred. Yeah.
I'm Fred Stella. My guest was Father Joachim Lally, and you're listening to Common Threads. Please join us next week here on WGVU-FM.